and MD-11 is down in China. Bombardier announces more layoffs, and the shuttle Atlantis ends a historic mission. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. We're back on our regular schedule today. Here's what's up in aviation for Monday, November 30th, 2009. The U.S. National Transportation Safety Board has dispatched Senior Investigator Bill English, a structures specialist, and technical advisors from the FAA, Boeing, and Pratt & Whitney to the scene of a Saturday cargo plane crash in China. The MD-11 was reportedly on takeoff from Pudong Airport in Shanghai, China, headed for Zimbabwe. Among the seven crew members, there are said to have been three fatalities and four with serious injuries. The lead agency on the investigation is China's General Administration of Civil Aviation. There's no initial word on suspected cause. The crew of the space shuttle Atlantis completed its 11-day mission with a landing at Kennedy Space Center during the earlier of two available re-entry windows Friday morning at 9:44 a.m. Eastern Time. Atlantis flew 171 orbits around the Earth and traveled over 4.4 million miles since its November 16th launch. The STS-129 mission included three spacewalks and the installation of two platforms on the International Space Station's truss. The platforms hold large spare parts to sustain station operations after the shuttles are retired. Also delivered was about 30,000 pounds of replacement parts for various station systems. Astronaut Nicole Scott was brought home aboard Atlantis after 91 days in space. It was a historic ride home. She's the last astronaut who will be transported to or from the station by the shuttle fleet. Bombardier has confirmed another 715 layoffs at its facilities in the Montreal area, starting in January and lasting through the first two quarters of the next fiscal year. Most of the layoffs were blamed on weakness in orders for the CRJ series, but a few are said to be related to lower production of the Bombardier 415 amphibious aircraft. The latest layoffs are in addition to the 4,300 layoffs previously announced for this fiscal year. In an announcement which may be bittersweet to production line workers, Bombardier noted it is currently recruiting for more than 500 positions in production support and engineering to support new aircraft programs. Airbus says its A400M military transport prototype has now taxied under its own power. The company says the aircraft's braking and steering systems were tested at speeds of up to 20 knots. The taxi testing follows several days of engine tests that started November 23rd with ground idle and flight idle tests of all four Europrop International TP400 turboprop engines and progressed through the last few days, reaching full power. Higher speed taxi tests are expected in the next few days and first flight before the end of the year. Up next on ANN, T-Alert rubs Diamond's nose in its latest bit of news. Australia commits to the Joint Strike Fighter, and Congress may declare lithium batteries hazardous cargo. You're listening to Aero News.
Diamond Aircraft's new DA-40 Diamond Star XL includes all popular Diamond options, combined with the sensational new Garmin GFC-700 Autopilot, a higher-performance power plant, and increased gross weight. This makes the Diamond Star XL the perfect choice for affordable personal flying. The Diamond Star XL features equipment and enhancements that increase performance, capability, safety, convenience, and comfort. Visit Diamond on the web at www.diamondair.com or call 888-359-3020.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for November 30th. I'm Paul Plack. Centurion, the company producing the turbodiesel aircraft engines formerly known as T-Alert, has announced three new distributors, including one of Europe's leading Diamond airplane dealers. That makes 33 distributors worldwide now. During the strife which followed the T-Alert bankruptcy, when prices for T-Alert engine parts skyrocketed, Diamond stepped up the development, certification, and introduction of a competing engine from its own subsidiary, Austro, and has developed retrofit kits for replacement of the original T-Alerts when replacement time comes. The relationship between the two companies has been less than warm. Centurion Chairman Jasper Wolfson basked in the irony. Quote, "The fact that we were able to recruit one of the largest Diamond airplane dealers in Europe demonstrates that the demand for our reliable and proven engines continues to be high, precisely among Diamond pilots," unquote. Centurion claims more than 2,600 Centurion 2.0 engines currently in operation in Piper, Cessna, Robin, and Diamond aircraft worldwide, with a fleet total of 1.7 million hours on the Hobbs. Australia's Minister for Defence, Senator John Faulkner, announced last week that the Australian government has approved acquisition of the first batch of F-35 Joint Strike Fighters, as was hinted in the 2009 Defence White Paper. The government has expressed confidence in the JSF's combination of stealth, advanced sensors, networking, and data fusion capabilities when integrated into the networked Australian Defence Force. The government has approved acquisition of the first 14 conventional takeoff and landing joint strike fighters and the infrastructure and support required for initial training and testing at an estimated cost of $3.2 billion Australian. A further order sufficient to establish three operational squadrons and a training squadron will be considered in 2012. So far, 25 Australian companies have won contracts worth about $200 million in the development and early production phase of the joint strike fighter, and the country has an industry participation plan as part of its contract with Lockheed Martin, which could bring additional opportunities as purchase commitments by Australia and other nations grow. The Airline Pilots Association is applauding a vote by the U.S. House Transportation and Infrastructure Committee to adopt the Hazardous Material Transportation Safety Act of 2009, which, among other things, contains wording regulating the shipment of lithium batteries aboard airliners. The law would be aimed not at the phones, computers, and cameras of passengers, but at bulk shipments of the batteries as cargo. Some lithium battery types can quickly develop high temperatures if shorted or damaged. Union President Captain John Prater had sent a letter to lawmakers November 18th, calling for regulating lithium batteries as a hazardous material and for enhanced requirements for marking, labeling, testing, packaging, and notifying the pilot in command. Quote, "It's gratifying that Congress has seized this opportunity to better protect airline passengers, crews, and cargo by calling for fully regulating lithium battery shipments on airliners," unquote. The bill also addresses external pipes on tanks containing flammable liquids, training of emergency responders, and other issues. Still ahead, the Spaceport Council has named its first chairman. A town battles the FAA over clear-cutting trees. And an F-6F Hellcat is raised from the deep. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Monday, November 30th. I'm Paul Plack. The Commercial Spaceflight Federation, not to be confused with the Federation of Planets, has announced the formation of a new council made up of spaceports worldwide seeking cooperation on issues of common interest, such as airspace access, legal and regulatory frameworks, infrastructure, and voluntary common operating standards. The Spaceport Council starts out with 10 members, including state agencies from Florida and Wisconsin, and spaceport authorities from New Mexico, Florida, Indiana, California, Oklahoma, Spain, Scotland, and Sweden. Steve Landine, Executive Director of Spaceport America in Las Cruces, New Mexico, says his selection as the Council's first chairman leaves him deeply honored and humbled. Quote, "Collecting and sharing the knowledge and experience base of spaceports worldwide will be beneficial to us all as commercial space vehicles begin to push the envelope toward more and more flights, and when working with policymakers, spaceports will benefit by formulating and presenting common positions," unquote. The Federation, I love saying that, says the council will convene regular meetings of spaceport principals as well as work to coordinate some matters at a staff level. The town of Hilton Head, South Carolina, appears to be lining up on the stripe for a chicken race with the FAA over trees encroaching on a runway at Savannah Hilton Head International Airport. The FAA says the trees may jeopardize both future federal airport grants and scheduled airline service. Some townsfolk protest that clear-cutting the trees as the FAA wants will be bad for the environment. The Island Packet quotes airport manager Paul Andres as saying the growing obstruction created by the trees has been noted for 10 years now. The FAA says it will pay for removing or topping them, but not for ongoing trimming. The county also wants the maintenance-free solution of removing the trees. The obstruction has already brought reductions in airline service. The town council is balking at clear cutting, but town manager Steve Relly says the issue will be revisited next month. And finally, if the weather cooperates today, a World War II F-6F-3 Hellcat fighter will be raised from the depths of Lake Michigan off Chicago. The plane's been resting on the lake bottom for more than 60 years after crashing during a training exercise. During the war, Navy pilots trained to land on aircraft carriers in Lake Michigan before seeing active duty. The so-called aircraft carriers used for the training were old Great Lakes passenger liners, modified with wooden landing decks. This particular Hellcat was lost in 250 feet of water on January 5, 1945. The pilot, Lieutenant Junior Grade Walter B. Elcock, survived and lives in Atlanta today. If I'd been swimming in Lake Michigan in January, I might have moved someplace with even warmer winters. The funding for the recovery operation is coming in part from Enterprise Rent-A-Car and donations by its CEO, Andy Taylor. His father, Jack Taylor, founded Enterprise and named it for the most decorated aircraft carrier in American history. The particular aspect of customer service for which Enterprise Rent-A-Car is best known will make for a great TV commercial with the plane's recovery as a backdrop for the company's existing slogan, Enterprise, we'll pick you up. That's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, CFI Bob Miller discusses the launch of a new feature in his monthly newsletter, Over the Airwaves. Airwork will examine flying basics that we tend to take for granted, but which keep showing up as the causes of accidents. This month, slow flight basics. And if you haven't done it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts at iTunes, Odeo, or at aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.